What do you have next?
This does sort of the same question. Do you have any guilt feelings?
Mm-mm. No. None at all.
Okay. Since you realized your difference in sexuality, how did and a specific way of dealing with the differences? Like, did you go out of your way to, go with women, or did you, like, I know you said about being with a man and a woman, simultaneously, like, but did you go out of that way to, still be with the men for appearance's sake, or?
Never. I have always probably, from the time I was young, when I had my first relationship at 13, always been in a relationship with a woman. Not too long after, while I was still seeing Jose, I was also seeing another woman that was a couple of years my junior. And that carried on for a while. Then, after that, I started seeing another woman who was probably my first really, really big love affair. The first real big love affair that I had. I think the thing with Josie, I was safe. I was real safe in that, but it was something I had known all my life. She was somebody I had grown up with. But I got into a relationship with a woman by the name of Spike. And that was probably, like I say, my first big love affair. And while we were in a relationship, the whole first year of that, she was still a nurse's training, so she was living in a residence. We hung around with the beat crowd, beatniks, and none of those men cared if we were gay or not. It didn't make any difference to them. And we weren't out doing particularly social things. We were sort of just hanging out. Poets and songwriters and, all the usual mishmash that you had with the whole Beat generation. Jack Kerouac was God and that kind of thing. That's also pretty much about the time that Madeline and Davis and I became friends. There's a whole lot of similarities in our life at that point. I'm not sure that I'm the first lesbian that you know.
She said that, really?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not sure. Okay. It's a public.
Do you have somebody?
I don't care.
When you came out like that, have you noticed like a difference in the attitudes? In how people accepted it, like you said that, as soon as the church found out they really wanted you out of the school and that. Like, have you noticed changes?
I don't know. With the group of people that I hung around with, I never started going to gay bars until probably the beginning of the 60s, going there as the only place to go. I still remained in that same group of people, that same beat crowd, until the owner of the bar, the particular bar, which was Lockrun's, told me that I could not remain going in there until I started wearing skirts, that I would have to stop wearing pants, because his license was in jeopardy. So, then I started going to gay bars. And my whole realization of things was completely different. I'd come from this group of straight people who were real open about my being gay, and I got into this real tight group of people who were ashamed of being gay, didn't want to be gay. So I see my feed, the things that I had fed into me about being gay were always positive. And I had gotten into a negative group of people who were just loaded full of self-hate. And, of course, I had self-hate too, but it wasn't to the degree. It wasn't over the same things. I wasn't guilty about being gay. I used to use the word dyke. They found dyke to be very oppressive, a oppressive word to use. And I imagine a lot of them still do. I used to use it all the time. I was a dyke over here and a dyke over there. And, you know, I was a lot of times ready to get my head split for calling somebody a dyke. And I stayed in that atmosphere for a few years, maybe about 10. And then I started moving out of it. When Mattachine started, I got involved with that immediately. And was involved in every lesbian group that ever started in the city. And boy, that was a running battle, because the women that started the first lesbian groups were feminists. And I did not consider myself a feminist. I wanted absolutely nothing to do with feminism. I thought it was going to take something away from me. I just absolutely was not going to have anything, no truck whatsoever with feminism. But I used to go every Thursday to those meetings. Every Thursday. So they were telling me something that I was grasping and I probably at that time did not want to accept.
Now, when you first started going to gay bars, were there men's bars and then lesbian bars and mixed bars? Or?
They were all mixed bars. There was one bar that was, there were two bars that, one was exclusively for women, one was exclusively for men, but most of them, they were not the busiest bars. The busiest bars were the mixed bars.
Were there a lot of bars?
One time there were about 8 of them. And the lesbian bar was nice, but after you went out and had a good time, that's where you went. You know, it was dark, and it was just a bar. I didn't particularly care for it. The only thing I liked about it is that there were a lot of women there. But I wasn't out seeking a woman because I was in a relationship with someone. And after we went everywhere else, we would go there. You know, it would be sort of a wind down of the evening. The community then, there was not the split between men and women that there is now, that gay men and women had to stick together because it was the only survival. I had women friends, lesbian friends, but I had closer male friends. Because everybody considered everybody else their competition. And we were always afraid that if somebody came around and started dancing with your girl, that you might end up with her. So that you had to do this whole big pompous routine about, you know, who was tougher. So there were a lot of fights. There was always somebody fighting over somebody else. And so when you wanted a good time, you went out and became one.
So you didn't meet your lovers in bars? You met them in other ways?
I can't think. Only one woman that I went with that I met in a bar. That I was in any kind of long-term relationship with.
You know, in the class we just read this master's thesis that was written in 1964 that said that bars were used for gay people when they wanted lovers, and that there were only very few people who would go to bars once they got in relationships. And
I agree with it and I don't agree with it. I think that most people met their lovers that way, met them in the bar. But I don't see that they discontinued going there. You know, I think that people still went out. They didn't go out as much. I mean, when you were cruising, you were out 8 days a week. And then when you were in a relationship, you might have gone out one of the two weekend nights. And you stayed home and played house.
Also in that class, it was brought up about rules of the bar. What do you feel about the differences in the rules? Like, if you wanted to meet someone in the bar, you don't stick with your friends, and you have to be careful who you look at and how long you look at it at the person and who you dance with and things like that. What do you think of the difference?
Well, it was in that situation in those days that you would check a person out to see if they were with anybody. If there was a group of people that you were friends with, say there were four couples that were out together, and you wanted to dance with somebody that was going with somebody else, you asked your butch whether or not you could dance with her. You didn't ask her, you asked your butch. Those were the rules. If you stepped over the line, then you were being too pushy. And there would probably be some kind of squabble over it.
Is it still like that today? Or is it changing?
I don't know. I don't see that so much anymore. At least with the particular group of women that, you know, that I relate to. I could imagine going up. One of the things that broke me of that was a black woman that I went with who somebody would come up and ask me if they could dance with her. And she said, if they ask you to dance, well then get up and dance with them, because I'm not going to dance with them, you know. I can't be bothered with anything that's secondhand. So I'm not being such a great dancer anyway, so it didn't really bother me.
And how about with people that you didn't know? I mean, like, there was just I don't know that much about bars, whether women would go by themselves, and whether it was, like, dangerous if you didn't know.
Well, people went in by themselves, and you would just sort of check them out, or else they'd go in with a group of women. But you had to be careful. You watched for a while to see if whether or not they were relating to any one particular person. Yeah, you just felt your way around. Let's see. You know how things go. I imagine it's the same way with straight people. You know, the same thing. But you just don't go barging in and ask somebody to dance, or you don't barge in and ask somebody to go home with you. So we have to go through, you know, a set way of things, of doing things. You know, you go out and you get an introduction, or you introduce yourself, and that's the first step. And then the second step is talking about things you have in common, you know, what kind of music you like, you know, what sports you're interested in. And then next comes the date. And then possibly after that, if not on the date, that date, then probably on a future date, then that's when the sex would come. Well, it's pretty much a standard rule that's followed, I think, just about everywhere.
So it's not really some big mysterious ritual.
Liz and I went out for 3 months before we slept together. 2 months, I think.
The women who, say, you knew when you first started going to bars, did they come from, like, backgrounds similar to you? We had a few questions at the end, things like, were there women who were married? Were there career women? Or, you know, women with sort of working class jobs?
Well, I think it was pretty much a combination of both. Although if a professional woman came around, she was the one that everybody was after. You know, everybody Because when Spike and I broke up, this woman who didn't know that we had been in a relationship together was sitting there telling me about how she was now going to the nurse. It was a big thing, she was going to the nurse. And she went on and on and on and on and on and on. I got tired of listening to her. I told her, I said, you mention her one more time, I'm going to knock you right off your bar stool. Because I wasn't ready to break that relationship off. She thought it was real wonderful that she was going with a woman that she considered to be a professional. And that's because nobody was inspired to rise, you know. You were in the bar at that time, there was a sleazy bar called the Chesterfield that was for women. And it was usually a tough group of women that went in there. And that's where you were going to stay forever. You were never, when that bar closed, you'd go to another sleazy bar, and you would stay there. So that if you found somebody that you thought was a little bit better than you, that you really clung to them. And I never found any sense in that either, because, and it was probably, again, falling back to having come around Lachlan's, that a whole lots of people there had, you know, all the degrees that they wanted to have. And my being, after Spike and I broke up, she, for a while, went with a couple of different women, but nobody really steady. And then I think it was pretty much that neither one of us were ready to break off the relationship. We were killing each other with it. And I think she hung around sort of just keeping an eye on what was going on. And I was certainly watching everything she was doing. So, and then after that she got into a relationship with a man and has now since married. But my being the only real lesbian in that bar, these straight women used to come on to me all the time. I could tell you on a Sunday who I was going to go home with on Thursday. Just, they all followed the same pattern. It all started at the baseball game. It was a real pattern. Madeline, well, I used to laugh about that. And it was simply because, you know, everybody wanted to experiment to see what it was like to sleep with a woman. But I didn't care. It didn't make any difference to it. They wanted it. I wanted it. So we both smile on Friday morning.
Some people get very upset about that sort of thing. Like, but I guess, you know, if you know what you're getting into, I mean, you obviously seem to.
Well, I wasn't looking for a relationship with any of these people. What I was looking for was sex. What they were looking for was not a relationship with me. They were looking for sex, and it never was detrimental to the way we related afterward. One of my best friends, a woman that was a friend to me for years and years, and we slept together within the first 3 months that we knew one another. You know, it was no real big thing. We slept together, and then we went on to be friends, and she got married, and her husband and I are, her ex-husband and I are good friends, and they had a child, and they had written it all up that if anything were to happen to the two of them, while they were still married, that I would be legal guardian. Well, Penny has since died, and her parents adopted Carrie, but the stipulation is still there, that if she's still a minor. So her mother and father know that I'm gay, you know, and it's just the way people respond. I didn't care. I didn't care. I didn't care if they were all straight or if they were all gay. You know, I wanted sex, and then they wanted the same thing. I agree with a lot of people that if people try to form some type of relationship and aren't honest, but these people were pretty much on the up and up. I ended up being friends with a lot of the women. A lot of their boyfriends didn't like me. I was friendly with a lot of I never missed a baseball game, I'll tell you. I was at every softball game.
Was it easier then to be friends with the straight women than with other gay women? Or was that two different time periods?
Well, it was just before the time period when I started going to gay bars. I think that was one of the things that got me tossed out more than Dave's license being in jeopardy. I'd slept with his wife. That was probably the clincher on the whole thing.
Yeah, I don't think that would go too big.
And he was in a position of power. He could say, you can't come in here anymore. And of course, I was the one that was hurt by that. I wanted to stay with my friends. And besides that, I was having a party.
Right. Okay. What kind of job were you working at?
I was unemployed for a while. So I went through about a 3-year period where I didn't bother working. And we sort of lived collectively. You know, a couple of people were working and they would rent the apartment and they would buy food. And it was amazing that we didn't have any need for money. We had everything we wanted. We had all that we wanted to drink and all that we wanted to smoke. You know, we weren't really interested in going out and buying new clothes. You went and bought a pair of shoes, and the pair of shoes you had on fell off. And then somebody always had an apartment where you could crash. So we had it was all right at that time. It was around 59. Yeah, I remember because there was a big steel strike that year, and a couple of the guys were steel workers. So, this one guy used to work, and then he was a cook, so he used to bring home all the food. We all worked at this one bar, and we used to steal all the booze. Yeah. So we had a little bit of time. We talked the bar owner into doing everything the way we wanted it done. It was pretty good.
Is it easier, being gay now than it was when you were growing up? Like, in order to keep things hidden, and it's easier to talk about it and be yourself, so to speak?
Well, I think so. I think that the women's movements had a large influence on that, that it's made it easier for the women to come out. I mean, there's college courses now. There's lesbian caucuses, you know, in all segments of the movement. You know, now he has a lesbian caucus in some cities. There's a lesbian caucus at the college. You know, there's a lesbian caucus in the Buffalo Women's Liberation Union. So that women are not as afraid of lesbians as they used to be. You find out that not, you know, lesbians don't want to sleep with every woman they see. You know, that's not the case. Well, that used to be the thing. You know, you used to say, "Oh, phew! I made it to the bar and I made it to the bathroom and back, and nobody attacked me." I can remember people saying things like that. You know, the people that used to go into the bars to gawk at the queers. "I made it in, made it back, and nobody attacked me."
I always equated incidents in the bathrooms with the gay men, not women. But I guess I was wrong. I always equated it more with them.
Well, I've always said that I think that the only reason that, I get lots of arguments on this, that the reason that gay men have sex in bathrooms is because it's easier for them to do it than it is for women. And besides that, women are raised with a whole different, you know, statue of morals and what sexuality is supposed to be, what it's supposed to mean, what it's supposed to be meaningful. And you don't have sex just to have sex. That it's more involved than that. And men are, I mean, straight men and gay men are used to going in, getting it off, and that's the end of it. They have, steam baths have never gone over for women the way they have for men.
Yeah, I always wondered that. Because I always wanted to try to get into the men's bath and just say, hi, I made it, and see what would happen. I always wondered why they wouldn't let women in there. I always say it's because they're prejudiced.
No, they tried it. The steam bath in Fort Erie tried having a women's night, and it flopped. There was somebody, I was at a Mattachine meeting Sunday, and one of the men was saying that there was a steam bath on the West Coast in San Francisco that caters to both men and women. Not knowing anybody that's been to that steam bath, any women, so I don't know what goes in there. Maybe they go in for a steam. They might just go in for a workout, and not necessarily for sex. But things are a whole lot easier on the West Coast than around here. People are probably a little more liberated because they have a strong community.
Also, in our class, it was brought up one time how it's strange that women always call it a relationship rather than an affair. And, you know, it's like men, you know, or like a straight, you know, couple, they, you know, have sex, you know, or are together, like, for a short time, it's an affair. It's a long time, it's a relationship. You know, how come in the gay community they'd rather call it a relationship than an affair? I always thought, you know.
I don't know, maybe it's because in the straight community, it's not recognized until it's a marriage. And gay people may relate on a different level than straight people do with one another. That, well, they don't call it, we don't call it a marriage because we're really not legitimate. We're not allowed that piece of paper that says you are now a couple. I've several times referred to, you know, things that I've been into as affairs.
I think the other thing that was funny was talking about that relationships, in quotes, is smiled upon. That it was just sort of a random remark that really wasn't dealt with. People said they had always gotten the general feeling that it was good to be in a relationship as opposed to having a lot of affairs.
I know one woman in the community that's what she wants, her affairs. And people like her, but they don't respond to very well to her. They're on that level. And I know lots of lesbians, you know, that are more street dykes, that that's what they have, are affairs. You know, they pick somebody up, they might sleep with them for 2 or 3, 4 maybe weeks, and then that's the end of it. And people are afraid to get into relationships. They're afraid to get into those kind of things with them, that they're going to be hurt. I suppose relationships are smiled upon. I never really paid any attention to it. Relationships require a lot of work. You have to put a lot of time into them. There's a whole lot of giving and taking. You have to give up things and you have to take things. At least that's what I've always found in relationships that I've given. Sometimes we want to give up, you know, a lot of things that was necessary for me to give up, so the relationships and, you know, so you go somewhere else. I was always basically for myself, which I always wanted to know. If I couldn't get it, I took my football and went home.
I don't know, this is sort of changing a little bit, sort of going back to the community. There's one bar now, and we are got talking about why. And then, I guess people who have been in the community longer, so yeah, those things happen. Sometimes there's only one, and then you have things change and you get several more. Is there any, like, do you see any reason why that sometimes there's 8 bars, sometimes there's 1? The only idea that was thrown out was the economic situation.
Well, lesbian bars are weekend bars. But lesbians don't have the money that gay men have, so that they're not able to go out 7 nights a week. I worked at 3 to 11 this week, so I had to drive up Delaware with the extension being closed, the entrances for the Niagara Thruway. So I drive up Delaware Avenue. Last night I looked into Ricardo and you could have shot a cannon through there. Mean Alice's is packed 7 nights a week. Packed. But I understand there's women going in there now that Wally's making it more friendly to women than he had in the past. But I also heard that he's closing, for whatever that means.
There was some kind of, like, 7 counts of sodomy charges against him.
Added note, this was just a rumor. Mean Alice's will remain open.
Yeah, then it has to close after the 90 days or something.
That's true then. Well, then the women won't have any bar at all because everybody will go back there, everybody will go to Ricardo's. Although Bill seems pretty adamant about the fact that he realizes the women were what saved his skin. And that he seems to be caving to the women. But I think that probably because no matter what, you have to go where the dollar goes. If you go into a lesbian bar and go into a gay men's bar, just watch the cash register. That indicates. I mean, I pointed that out to Liz about being in the downtown manor, and the register was not ringing. I forget where it was. We might have gone to Hibachi room, and that register was just smashing all the time. We went to the drag show, the first drag show we had around Christmas time, at Mean Alice's. We actually had to shout in order to get waited on at the bar because the bartenders were so busy and they had 4 of them behind the bar.
Yeah. Now I have a problem when I'm here because I'm so short and I barely reach the top of the bar. I have to stand on a stool to be seen.
Mm-hmm. So then there won't be any of this bar.
Where do bars come from? This article that we had said that they were studying California, San Francisco, saying that a lot of times, I guess it was mostly, you know, mixed or men's bars, that they knew that they would be financial successes, so they didn't have any trouble reopening, and a lot of times there were bartenders that went from place to place,
mm-hmm.
and they would have a following.
Well, that's what it's been in Buffalo. When the Villa first opened, they had a bartender by the name of Dennis, who left there when Hibachi Room opened and became the bartender there. He cleaned out the Villa. Everybody left the Villa and followed Dennis to Hibachi Room. And then he stayed there for a long time and then opened his own bar. And a lot of people went there, but it was in a bad area. It was down in William and Fillmore. People didn't like driving through the area. But he ended up on Charities. And his place was closed. And then he got into with the leather crowd. And he bought into the Villa again. He bought into it this time instead of just working there. And he took a whole lot of people with him. People will follow a bartender, a good bartender. He always poured a good drink, you know, he always poured a good stiff drink. But when Mean Alice's opened, it did Dave Chipman right in. Chipman had everybody over a barrel. He was charging $2 to get in. He wasn't offering any space. The space was very limited. And when they opened the analysis, there was a lot of room for people to go up there.
When did Mattachine get started? And then, like, when did, like, gay groups start getting moving? And, yeah, let's start with that.
Mattachine started in 1969. The gay movement in this country took off after the Stonewall riots in New York City in June of 69. Mattachine had formed, but wasn't, you know, they were just a small group that was meeting. And, but after the Stonewall riots, I can't remember if they were 68 or 69. I think they were in 69. But after those riots, gay liberation took right off in this country. Started pretty much in New York City with Gay Activist Alliance and the Gay Liberation Front in New York, and then it started up in the West Coast and in Chicago. So I would say that, you know, the movement as it stands now started in 69. It also started in 69 here. And you know what the Stonewall riots are?
I have, like, a vague sort of idea. I know I've read about them, but I don't have it, like, right on the top of my head. Was it about people getting beat up at a bar?
What happened was, in New York City, the police, whenever they felt like it, would go in and raid a gay bar. They decided to raid the Stonewall Inn. I think it was on the 27th of, somewhere around the 27th of June in 69. And for the first time, they fought back. And the ironic thing about it was, is that it was a bar for transvestites, drag queens. And they fought them all the way back to the precinct house and remained rioting for 2 days. And that was the beginning. Strange things about that, because that seems to be the same time. The night that those riots began was the night or the week that Judy Garland died. And people have wondered, you know, I haven't spoken to anybody since I found that out, that was involved in any of those riots. I used to be familiar with a couple of the people, a couple of the men that were in them. If, whether or not that was such a period of mourning for them that they just couldn't, you know, that was just, they came in there and busted them up and they pushed them right back again. They fought them with beer bottles and shoes and clubs and purses and rocks. Push the cops right back to the precinct house. And then everybody sort of got into it. You know, different gays in the city just joined in on it and really held them off for a couple of days. A friend of mine brought back the papers. She happened to be in New York at that weekend and brought back the papers for me. So I don't know, but that would be interesting for somebody to find out whether or not that was a reason or force. You know, that happened. Part of the reason. Well, it was bound to come sooner or later. Cops probably didn't get their payoff.
Why do police like to come down so heavy on gay bars? I mean, I know there's a lot of gay people in the force, you know. Don't they feel strange doing that? So maybe people that they know?
I don't know, I'm not a cop. I know one guy that was a cop and left. They put him on the vice squad and he quit. Became a bartender in gay bars. But he was in one of the raids. One of the bars that used to be on Genesee Street, you know, years ago. And I guess when they went in, they really did a lot of damage to the people. And they clubbed a lot of people. I know one guy that lost all his front teeth as a result of a nightstick. And he quit the force shortly after that. He was a lieutenant. I don't know. You know, it'd be hard for me to tell you what somebody else's feelings are about how they make you into something. I might as well wouldn't be a cop. You know, there's always that fear of who you're going to get involved. Busting anybody is shit. That was one of the things I refused to plant, security. I bid on it and I got it, I almost died.
You made decisions with your jobs. I know, like, just last week you were talking about, you thought that they were...
Lining me up for supervision. Yeah, I think they are, so I think after Liz and I come back from this trip, because I got the time off.
Good.
I'm going to tell my foreman that I'm a lesbian so he doesn't embarrass himself by putting my name on it.
He doesn't know?
I don't know if he knows or not, but I'm going to make sure he knows. Because they don't want anything that they consider to be the least bit off color in supervision, because one of the things you can do is join, like, the Bethlehem Management Club once you get into supervision. Now you're rubbing elbows with, you know, the big cheese. You can be sitting at a table next to Daggett, who's the general manager of the plant. And they want everybody to be just right into this position. They usually want people to be married, you know. We studied with a couple of kids, had a couple of outside interests that they did. My outside interest, of course, in the gay liberation, I don't think they're ready for it.
Why did you decide to go work at the steel plant?
Well, you want me to show you my pay stub?
Right.
There are two things I work for when it comes to a job, and that's payday and quitting time. I make $300 a week for 40 hours. That I don't really do anything too much. You know, one night I'm able to bust my hump, but then for three nights I'm able not to do anything. I worked half a night before last and not at all last night. And I'm making top dollar for it. So.
Was it hard to get into the steel plant?
No, I applied. It was at a period where they were still hiring. They hired a group of women. 1970 and 1971. Thank you, and 1973. I went in with the second batch in 1970.
In all the jobs that you had, did you come out on all of them?
Mm-hmm.
Or did it take a lot of thinking and thoughts on how you do it? And
no, I just acted the same way all the time. And if people, I never told, went around telling people I was gay, but I certainly never denied it. If they came up to me, and it always happened that somebody always came up and asked me, and I always told them yes, they were. Because I figured if I'm, you know, I want them to know where I'm at so they don't hit me. If they're going to can me, they'll can me now, but they're not going to can me later. You know, for that reason. I can't think of any person who's actually fired for being gay.
After, you know, people found out you were gay, did you notice a difference in feelings towards you?
No, I think it's because of the kind of, I always do factory work. I always do some kind of production work. Or driving a cab. You know, that kind of stuff. They don't care. They ask you questions about it, isn't it? They want to know if you have the same kind of squabbles that they have with their husbands, or do they have with their wives. And they ask if actually sex between two women can be satisfying. And you say that you wouldn't be doing it for more than half your life if it wasn't. And they sort of agree with it.
That's real different than, I know a lot of women who are, say, in a teaching profession, not a lot, some women, who think that it would be very dangerous.
No, it would be detrimental to their jobs. There's a clause, I mean, even after you get tenured, it's called moral turpitude, something like that. They can't get you on that. They can't get you anywhere.